97.5, The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. 6 o'clock hour is brought to you by Family & Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com, South Jersey's diamond destination. Go back to the phones now with Ryan in South Jersey to lead things off. Ryan, you're on The Fanatic.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I'm going to talk about the Sixers and the Eagles a little bit.
Sure.
I just think the Sixers have a culture problem. There's a lot of drama that follows this team. You know, Joel and Ben got the keys to the house pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And Brett Brown's really just let them, like, do what they want. When you search Ben Simmons' name on Google, the first thing that comes up is Kendall Jenner. You know, it's not even basketball. It's like drama just seems to follow this team. And it's a problem. That's why everyone's talking about them today, because people love drama, unfortunately.
It's like, you know, reality, what I mean? TV. What's the fix, Ryan? What do you think needs to happen?
I said this 2 or 3 years ago when we lost to the Celtics 4-1. Brett Brown got totally outcoached by Brad Stevens, and I thought he should have went after that series. But I get the whole idea of him sticking through the process and everything. So, I mean, this year I guess we got to ride him out because we're already this far deep. But, I just think people love the drama.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about that. We live for the drama. I heard the Jersey Shore is coming back again, and people are way into it still, so that doesn't shock me, especially considering the fact that the expectations for this team were through the roof, and if it gets derailed by the drama again, it's going to be a big-time problem. What do you have on the Birds, Ryan?
I think they can make a run because, like, why not? We got Doug Peterson. He's a hell of a coach during this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The only team that scares me, really, is the Saints. I mean, 49ers, Jimmy G, you don't know how he's going to show up in the playoffs. This is his first ride in the playoffs. I love the Birds. As long as we don't have to go to New Orleans until the NFC Championship game, I'm riding with the Birds.
Ryan, good stuff, man. Thanks for the phone call. It's an interesting point that you bring up about San Francisco because, on one hand, I agree, right? You don't know what you're going to get from playoff Jimmy G. You saw San Francisco kind of make a big-time hero turn from last year to this year in terms of the wins and losses and the results and things like that. And obviously Garoppolo being healthy plays a large role in that too. But I've always thought that the big-time difference in playoff teams and non-playoff teams, does your game travel or not? And Ryan talked about the Eagles needing to go to New Orleans and that potentially being a tough matchup. I have always liked a team that's built like San Francisco's ability to be consistent on the road and at home. Now, it won't end up mattering in this case because the Eagles would have to travel to San Francisco, but as far as I'm concerned, we were talking about whether this would be a successful season or an unsuccessful season. If they don't win a playoff game, if you just make the playoffs, is that enough to be a success? As far as I'm concerned, if you lose at home in the playoffs, that's a failed season for anybody. Any team, regardless of what your expectations are, you lose a home playoff game, that's bad. But you win one, then you go on the road, and maybe the expectations change a little bit, and you don't have to worry about it nearly as much. Like I said, I'll cross that bridge when we come to it, but when it comes to Seattle, I just don't think there's enough. I just don't think there's enough on that team to the point where you can feel confident that this is going to be a team that takes down the Eagles. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti and at 97.5, The Fanatic. Pro Football Hall of Fame finalists have been announced as well. Troy Polamalu, thumbs up, thumbs down, Josh. Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's in. Thumbs up. Reggie Wayne. Thumbs down. Coming from a Peyton Manning guy. Got to get the explanation for that later. Torrey Holt. That's the tough one. He's been waiting forever. Torrey Holt should get in, I think. John Lynch. Man, Josh is going through the backflips through the window. I'll give him some time to process those four. We'll go to Chuck in Las Vegas next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Chuck.
GT, what's good, man?
Not too much, man. How are you?
I'm great, man. First of all those guys are in the Hall of Fame, dude. Come on, man. You're going to keep Reggie Wayne out of the Hall of Fame.
That's what I said. It's like Reggie Wayne. And the thing is that Josh will go to his grave defending Peyton Manning over anybody.
Yeah, come on, Josh. Go watch some Reggie Wayne highlights. But
Kiss my ass.
But JT, man, I'm feeling so good. I'm probably a little bit overconfident for this weekend, man. Seattle has not impressed me. They've not been good in December. They recently lost to the Arizona Cardinals.
Two touchdowns at home.
Russell Wilson has not been that great in December. And look, I love Russell Wilson. I think he's one of the three best quarterbacks in the game. The fact that he doesn't look good right now in December, that speaks volumes to the Seattle Seahawks as a group. You know, their running backs are depleted, and I don't think that's going to be a huge deal. They can overcome that. But really, their receivers aren't impressive. I think Tyler Lockett is still dealing with some injuries, Joe.
I mean, you look at what he's done since the return from injury. He does not look like the same guy at all.
At all. I mean, he went from having an all-pro season to pretty much doing absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
And, you know, Jadeveon Clowney, look, he's one of these guys. I mean, there's a reason why Bill O'Brien let him go. I think he's overrated. Joe Staley just, like, manhandled him last week with no help whatsoever. This Seattle team doesn't scare me. You know, Russell Wilson notwithstanding. But, and with our group, I mean, look, we have so much momentum right now. You know, Boston Scott, Greg Ward, these guys are not only hungry to keep their jobs, as everyone's pointing out, but they've got some skill, man. I think these guys pretty much have just as much skill as some of these other guys who were in our lineup earlier in the year. Plus you add how motivated they are to play, and they just seem to have a rapport with Carson Wentz, who's just on fire right now. And yeah, man, look, we're going to San Francisco or Green Bay.
Chuck, I feel the exact same way, man. Thanks for the phone call. Really appreciate it, brother. He said that he seems overconfident. I don't even know if that's possible. I mean, they're going to win, though. Like, it's not that they are going to blow them out or anything. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the Eagles aren't going to lose this playoff game at home. It's just they're not going to do it. So I'd say that's just the appropriate level of confidence. Now, Josh, you're saying that Peyton Manning's prowess is why you would not have Reggie Wayne in the Hall of Fame right now.
Well, first off, Chuck exposed himself. Reggie Wayne didn't have a lot of highlight reel plays.
Exposed himself?
Well, it's a lot of timing stuff, and that was him and Marvin Harrison. You didn't go, oh, look at the 50-50 ball that Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison grabbed. That was one-handed. It was a lot of timing plays.
Well, he's an elite-level route runner, right?
Well, exactly. And I will say this. Okay, I looked a little more at the resume. You got to give it because of the resume, so I'll give him the thumbs up with that.
Okay.
But I'm not going to go highlight reel, and that's why you put him in. There's no shot with that.
So the reason, and this is one of the only reasons that it's not fair, that I would definitely have Reggie Wayne in, is because when Marvin Harrison was no longer a Colt, his numbers not only stayed where they were, but they increased, despite the additional interest from defensive backs and stuff like that. So it's like, for me, as far as I'm concerned, and this is not going to be popular with Steelers fans out there, I'm sorry, the book is very much like open on Juju Smith-Schuster as to whether he's a number one receiver or not. Now, injuries played a big role in it, but it's easy to put up big-time numbers when Antonio Brown's over there. Are you able to do it when you're the one that's being game planned for? Reggie Wayne answered that question. Now, Peyton Manning helped out a lot.
Yeah, the quarterback situation, I think, really comes into play with Juju. But at the same time, you are right. You have more attention paid on you. But at the same time, you also have an elite quarterback that's giving you more attention. It's the same thing. Julian Edelman, once Wes Welker went away, I know he's getting a lot more snaps because he's filling in for the Wes Welker role.
Right.
But at the same time, you have an elite-level quarterback like Tom Brady's full attention instantly.
Mm-hmm. There you go. 610-632-0975. Let's go further down the list. We did the top four. I think that all four are in. I'd be like kind of maybe on John Lynch, but I think John Lynch is going to get in anyway. This was the big shocker for me, and I don't know if it's fair or not. Edgerrin James. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer either, and he's a Hall of Fame finalist this year. Richard Seymour. I think Seymour's got a really good chance. Really, really strong chance. Steve Atwater, I like. Zach Thomas, I'm torn on.
I love Zach Thomas. I was waiting for you to drop that name.
I'm torn on him.
Here's why I love him, because he's one of the most underrated middle linebackers of all time, because he came in the same year as guess who? Ray Lewis.
Uh-huh. That's the truth. Really, really outstanding player. And he's probably going to make it.
You look at his resume and what he did, especially towards the tail end of Dan Marino's career and, you know, going into Damien Huard or whatever.
Oh, man. 154 combined tackles. 120 solo tackles his rookie year. 120 solo tackles his rookie year. Now, that was the most solo tackles that he ever had. In 2006, at age 33, he had 165 combined tackles. Zach Thomas was a beast. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Mike Edwards, Coach Edwards 69, tweets in, John Lynch is not a Hall of Fame player. He's very good. A Ring of Honor guy for the Bucks. I've got to say, I agree. I look, if you're a really good player on a Super Bowl team, does that make you a Hall of Famer? Like, I think John Lynch was a really good player on a team that won the Super Bowl. Does that mean he's a Hall of Famer? I don't know. I don't think so. Look, first of all, I think that safeties, it's difficult for safeties to make the Hall of Fame. Look at what you have to do. You have to be Brian Dawkins or Ed Reed or Troy Polamalu, who hasn't made it yet, but I think that's an easy one. That's what level of safety you have to be in order to make it.
And the problem is sometimes you don't want that safety to stand out for you to give him the highest praise.
Exactly right. If they're invisible, that's great. Or they're Ed Reed and they have 8,000 interceptions, right? Like, that's the other thing. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic. Having to agree with Coach Edward 69 on Twitter. Paul Arch tweets in, I agree on the Eagles, saying that the Eagles are going to win, but I'm never not nervous. Is it strange that I'm not nervous for this game, Josh? I know that you pay Seattle a healthy amount of respect, but you also said that by Sunday, you were going to be all Eagles'd up. Has the transition begun?
Well, I was paying Russell Wilson respect, and as we know how I feel about this, there's a lot of moving parts around the quarterback. As much as we like to overpraise the quarterback, what you're pretty much saying is Seattle's kind of trending a little bit down, and the Eagles have been trending up, and that plays a huge part in it, because people like to look at the roster and they say, oh, we win here, you win there, and they like to do the roster comparison like what Dallas and Philly were doing. Dallas won that, but one team was trending up and another team was just inconsistent. Dallas was coming off the big win, but Dallas has been consistently, if anything, inconsistent.
No, that's the truth, 100%. And I would say that on the same token, you've got Seattle, I wouldn't say trending a little bit downward. I mean, Chuck said that he anticipated that Seattle would be able to overcome the loss of their running backs. I'm like, they are on a guy who was on his couch. That's how far down they are. It's not like you lose your top guy or your top two guys. They didn't have a running back. They didn't have anybody left.
And if a running back's going to have a big day, it's going to be Homer. It's not going to be Lynch.
That's right. Exactly. That's exactly it. Did you see Marshawn Lynch's yards per carry was at like 2.3 or something like that? It kind of looked exactly, actually, like the return that we anticipated. Looked exactly like that. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. Want to remind you that the Fanatic Pro Shop is open. Quality Fanatic and Philadelphia sports-themed apparel and merchandise at discount prices. The Fanatic Pro Shop at 97.5thefanatic.com. Some good stuff there. Let's take a look at that that Bill Barnwell NFL playoff primer, so you can see what they say about the Eagles and what the national perspective is on the Birds. So they have ranked all of the teams, as far as I can tell. I believe they've ranked every playoff team, sorted by their projected chances from ESPN's Football Power Index to win the Super Bowl. I'd assume that the Ravens are going to be at the bottom of this. And they are. So they believe that the Ravens have the best chance to win the Super Bowl. They've got Philadelphia at number 8. So that is more respect, let's say, than Houston has gotten, than Seattle has gotten, which tells you how they think it's going to go, Tennessee and Buffalo. So, This is the write-up, right? They're talking about the Eagles winning the NFC East by default. Carson Wentz, since the Dolphins game, has posted the league's eighth best passer rating and thrown seven touchdowns without a pick. Although the QBR in Knox and ESPN's quarterback rankings, not QB rating, knocks him for the fumbles and drops him to 20th over the last 4 weeks. So that's not good. We've talked about the fumbler. We've talked about that. He is definitely the fumbler. It's, does he do enough other stuff that that doesn't matter? And then ESPN says, I'm not sure the turnaround tells us much about the Eagles. The season-ending four-game win streak came within the division, which will go down as one of the worst in NFL history. Three of the four wins were against the lowly Giants in Washington, with the Eagles trailing two in the fourth quarter. Unfortunately for Wentz and company, everyone else in the division is busy making coaching changes right now. Philadelphia is going to have to beat far better competition from here on out. It's true. Then they talk about the injuries. And if the Eagles could be healthy, that would help them out a lot, which obviously is true. I didn't know this, that the Eagles were great offensively and defensively on third down. They rank fourth in the NFL on third down rate on both offense and defense. And as ESPN points out, it's not supported by their performance on other downs. So on first down and second down, they're like 15th in the league and 25th in the league in converting first downs. And then fourth in the league on third down. It doesn't measure up, but it is what it is. Maybe it's the identity of the team, because you know what? It would fit right in with the backs against the wall kind of situation where the Eagles play their best. It's a pretty good write-up. It's pretty substantial. You can check it out at ESPN, but kind of rosy in terms of the outlook for the Eagles. And given the fact that they're putting the Eagles in front of the Seahawks here, who had a really good season, but just not playing that well going into this game, I think that that makes a big time difference. It's a snapshot in time, like I said. It's not about, is this team better or worse? It's about, is this team ready to play at the same level as this other team? And I think that that's where the difference lies with these guys. The Seahawks are kind of limping into the playoffs. I know that they faced a really tough road down the stretch, and the Eagles faced an easier road. But the Eagles are still playing their best football of the season, and the Seahawks are far from that. That's way, way in the rearview mirror at this point. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. So Jay tweets in, I don't understand Eagles fans. It's always a good way to start a tweet. 49ers five-time Super Bowl champs is in his avatar, or his Twitter bio. I don't understand Eagles fans. That one caller said he likes Eagles' chances against the 49ers because you don't know what you're going to get from Jimmy G, yet you don't know what you're going to get from Carson Wentz. He's never played in a playoff game either, do people think. It's a good point. It's good. Just going to leave that there. It's a good point. It's all a projection. For the record, I'd anticipate that both of these guys play well in the postseason. I'd anticipate that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be just fine in the playoffs, and that Carson Wentz will be as well. To be quite honest with you, I don't think that there's anything that Wentz is going to see in the playoffs now that he hasn't seen already at some level over the course of his career so far.
And these aren't the traditional quarterbacks playing in their first playoff game. They're very seasoned heading into it compared to other quarterbacks in the past.
Well, yeah, you're not seeing, you know, rookies go in and, you know, you just see what happens and you never know. There's enough of a sample size on both Garoppolo and Wentz that you'd feel pretty good about it. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. On Twitter, it's at Joe Torti and at 97.5, the Fanatic. Flyers taking on Vegas tonight. You're going to hear Fanatic Flyers weekly at 9 o'clock. And then pregame coverage starts right around 9:50. And, of course, the game should be a pretty good one. Flyers are in need of points. Would be good to start putting a couple of wins together here. 610-632-0975. Also talking about the Eagles' playoff chances. And then coming up next, I do want to get into further. We talked about it briefly, the Philadelphia 76ers and what is going on with the Sixers, what's going on with Josh Richardson, talking about the team not having any accountability, or at least having accountability issues. Plenty of drama coming up. And, of course, the Sixers, to their credit, are quote-unquote taking accountability concerns seriously. And, of course, as Yahoo Sports points out, the Sixers also can't stop taking veiled shots at one another. For example, the thing is that, well, I'll read you some of these because they're pretty decent and juicy quotes. I'll read them to you in a matter of moments here. First, we're going to talk to David in North Philly next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Good evening, David.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
I mean, I feel like I think we have a pretty good chance to win the game. I think we will win, but it's nothing about this is going to be easy with the amount of injuries.
Sure.
It's just going to come down to just not making the mistakes.
What is it that gives you the confidence, though, that they are going to win?
I mean, they're playing the best football they've played all year. And to be honest, up until the last couple of games, they hadn't played 60 minutes of football at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the infusion of the practice squad guys, and people say practice squad guys as a negative, and I'm looking around. I don't really care what the other 31 teams are because I don't follow them as deeply as I follow ours.
Sure.
But I look at our roster you look at it over a 10-year time frame. Clement's undrafted. So an undrafted guy, they usually wind up on a practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Mills is a seven-round pick. You know, a lot of those guys end up on a practice squad.
Yep.
He's not the best cornerback ever. I mean, I don't expect him to be Deion Sanders, but he did start and made plays against, a couple of those Atlanta games.
Julio Jones assignment. Yeah.
But again, he didn't get the interception, which, you know, maybe Richard Sherman makes the interception, but the bottom line is he won the game.
Sure.
And at the end of the day, that's the only thing that counts. So, Jason Peters undrafted. I don't particularly care where you get the players. Just get the right players. And there was some criticism with Carson Wentz talking about, so, you know, he wasn't making the players on the team better. And then the classic example that I heard was the Jabbar Gaffney.
Mm.
He didn't do anything for us. He went to Tom Brady. I think he had 700-800 yards. Well, Gaffney was another nobody. He didn't do anything after that. Well, I think Boston Scott, I think he's a legitimate player going forward.
Okay.
Greg Ward, I'd like to see them, you know, bring in some better talent on the offensive side, you know, skill position. So
sure. But Ward's probably an NFL player, right? Not sure, huh? Wow.
But again, I'm thinking realistically. If you really want to compete, if you really want this team to be able to go toe-to-toe with Mahomes and the Chiefs, those teams like
sure.
that, Greg Ward's not going to be the guy. I mean, let's be real. If you put Richard Sherman or Patrick Peterson one-on-one.
You mean as the number one guy? No, I'm saying could he be the slot guy for you?
Even as the slot guy, I mean, Jordan Matthews. Who's better, him or Jordan Matthews?
Oh, he's better than Jordan Matthews.
Okay, well, how many catches does Jordan Matthews have?
This year?
Touchdown? Career. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Are you saying that you think that Greg Ward could be as physically accomplished as Jordan Matthews?
That's a great question because there's not the Chip Kelly element. Thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. I'm up against it. I do think that there's nothing special about Jordan Matthews. Just like I think that there's nothing special about Nelson Agholor. I think in the NFL, there are elite-level slot receivers, and then there are slot receivers who are not elite and still put up numbers because you're feasting on linebackers and the third corners on teams and safeties and stuff like that. If you're asking me who I'd take, Nelson Agholor or Greg Ward, that's super easy. I'm taking Greg Ward. If you're asking me who I'd take, Jordan Matthews or Greg Ward, that's super easy. I'm still taking Greg Ward. Jordan Matthews this year has 4 catches for 33 yards and 0 touchdowns. Greg Ward, folk hero of the Philadelphia Eagles, has already caught a touchdown pass. This season, he has, let's see. In his total, he has 28 catches, 254 yards in the score. Yep, I'm taking Ward. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show. 97.5 The Fanatic, 7 o'clock hour, is brought to you by Club Risque, the Delaware Valley's premier gentlemen's club with three locations, Philly, Bristol, and Northeast Philadelphia. For more information, visit clubrisque.com. All right, so this is coming to us from Yahoo Sports. Obviously, we all remember the good times that the Philadelphia 76ers felt when they had their Christmas Day blowout of the Bucks. Meanwhile, since then, they lose in overtime to Miami Heat and a couple other nondescript Florida teams and stuff like that. And Ben Simmons says, according to USA Today, we were right there. It starts in the first quarter. We've got to carry the same energy all the way through. We can't wait until the last minute to pick it up, which, I mean, seems like it's a fairly innocuous quote, right? And as Yahoo points out, it seems harmless until Monday's practice when Al Horford told Keith Pompey that Brett Brown was not maximizing his skills on the offensive end. Quote, I'm out there for the team and doing what I can to help us, but offensively, I'm very limited with the things I can do, so I can't control that stuff. So all I have to do is make sure I'm there for the team, trying to do everything I can to help us win. Ultimately, we have to rely on Brett to make the decisions to put us in position to go out there and play and keep competing. Uh-oh is right. And then, of course, there's the big shot across the bow coming from Josh Richardson. Quote, I don't think there's enough accountability in our locker room right now, honestly. I think we got some new guys who don't want to step on toes, including myself. I feel like we kind of go play and don't compete as much. There have been games that we have competed, and it's been great. But when it's not going good, we've got to hold each other accountable. I think that's where a lot of our problems start. Going forward, we got to talk to some people about it, and we got to do it. We talk about playing hard every day. We talk about, you know, we break the huddle with a chip every day. And we've got a long way to go before we actually start competing for that. I think our locker room has some growing to do. And then, of course, there's Embiid talking about people who need to be better offensively. Yeah. And now here's Brett Brown with what he said to Keith Pompey. I'm not critical of Al Horford at all. I'm more curious about what I can do to help him. A lot of times it comes back to the environment that he's in. Everybody has to deal with a level of sacrifice and role recognition. Yikes. What does that sound like? That sounds like a conflict brewing to me. Like, hey, Al, this isn't your team, and you got to get used to that. And then Horford says, what did you give me $109 million for exactly? You want me to set screens? Is that what I'm supposed to do? Man, oh man. I think that for Brett Brown to talk about living in truth when it comes to accountability issues, that was the final straw, at least for me, that triggered like the alarm bells. Where it went from being like a little smolder to a 5-alarm fire. Because even if there are accountability issues, you never, ever hear coaches saying, like, yeah, we're not doing a good job of keeping ourselves accountable. Because, you know, the first person that's responsible for that, the head coach. So for him to say, yeah, I feel like we're living in the truth there, and there's a level of accuracy, and it was delivered with good I don't care whose intentions, good or bad, it was delivered with. You've got to keep that on lock. Man, oh, man. When I heard this, every negative call that we've ever had about the Eagles or the Sixers or the Phillies or the Flyers ran back through my head with the locker room being out of control or this player's not doing enough to help the team win or there's no chemistry or this and that and the other thing. I feel like there are 10,000 of these. And then, of course, on the flip side, you've got some validation finally coming in from Brett Brown. You've got validation coming in from all of these other sources, Josh Richardson, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Al Horford, that it doesn't seem that all rowers are pulling in the same direction. And that's where I've got some questions about where things could go. That's where I've got questions about the way that things might be able to progress. And so now I am wondering whether this is something that is a bigger concern and that this whole ship is going to be scuttled. Is this whole situation going to be something that slides sideways? Is this whole thing, are the Sixers' opponents not just the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? But is it also they've got to deal with themselves as well? Your phone number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. You can reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm curious to see what the reaction to this is because the Sixers have been a team that's generated a whole lot of interest. Sixers are a team that have generated, let's just call it what it is, generated a lot of drama around the league. There are a lot of people that already have them pegged or had them pegged as the potential representatives for the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals. Raising my hand. I thought that they'd get there from a 2 seed. But I talked about Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee matches up really, really well with the entire NBA. Just not the Sixers. So in the event that you ran into the Bucks in a playoff series, home field advantage, home court advantage, I should say, does matter. But at the same time, I think the Sixers have at least a 55-45 matchup advantage there. At least. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. Let's go to Jeff in Fishtown next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, what's up, man? I have a few points on Boone, if I could.
Okay.
Number one, I don't say it all stems from him, but him playing the most important position on the perimeter, not being a perimeter player, is just, it's asinine. So it's difficult to think of any successful situation that he can be in when he's clogging the lane, dribble handoffs, and going into the block when there's already two centers on there. So I'm struggling. I'm like at a point now. It's like, hey, do you trade? Like, how could you trade someone like that? But then it's like, this is his fourth year, and the guy doesn't even have a pump fake in his game. So I'm really struggling not to blame Ben for a lot of this because all he has to do is get the threat of shooting, and then most of the stuff goes away. Then Brett can actually coach how he's supposed to, because right now he has a point guard that doesn't shoot the basketball. So trying to coach and ignore that is incredibly difficult.
Well, so let me ask you, Jeff, because a lot of people would point to Ben Simmons' lack of an outside game as the big reason why. So what do you see that would fix? Like, what issues, if he turned into a 20% shooter from the outside, like what would that fix?
So number one, definitely it would increase spacing, right? Right. 100%. 100%. You have a gut. So imagine, like, the Sixers, say, in crunch time, just for example, 5 minutes left, whatever. They have a great offensive scheme going. They make 4 or 5 passes out, 5 seconds left on the shot clock. They play great offense. They pass the ball 3 times, comes to Ben Simmons, does a 3-point line with 5 seconds left. That's literally a liability. It's a handicap on the offense. So if he does shoot it, even at 20%, that just opens it up. Like, yeah, if he makes it,
incredible. If he misses it, you have two giant guys there for a rebound. It just opens everything up. And it's, like, ridiculous that the dude is a grown man and refuses to shoot the basketball. Like, I can't get over that.
Well, I mean, Jeff, don't get me wrong. Thanks for the phone call. I find that to be shocking, too. It's pretty amazing that it's happened. But I do wonder about whether, A, it's ever going to happen, and B, whether it would help. Because, like I said, I don't think that him being a 20% shooter from the outside fixes spacing issues, because I don't respect a 20% shooter on the outside. What do I care if a 20% shooter is pump faking? I don't care. That's like Giannis shooting a three, as far as I'm concerned. When you look at how easy it is for Giannis to get to the basket against most teams, if he's willing to step out there and just settle for a three-point attempt, I consider that a defensive win. Now, he's better at shooting threes than Ben Simmons is. I will give you that 100%. But when it comes to Simmons, the thing about him is that he always wants to make the best basketball play. It's not necessarily about the best play for him as an individual. 610-632-0975. David, big homie, we're going to get to you guys next. It's the Joe Torti Show. Hanging out until 9 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out until 9 o'clock, and then it's Fanatic Flyers Weekly, so really you're stuck with me until the Flyers take on the Vegas Golden Knights. Talking Sixers, of course, as has become the custom around here because, well, they're just pretty interesting. I mean, you look at all the talent that they have, and the results haven't quite been there except, you know, in the high-profile games on Christmas Day because drama reasons. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Let's keep the phones rolling with David in Westchester next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, David.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
Great, how are you?
Good, I love the show. I gotta admit, I'm a Celtics fan, and I watch the talent that the Sixers have. I've been living here for long enough to watch the Sixers games, and when these guys have it on, man, they're unstoppable. But as a Celtics fan, I lived through it last year. The problems in the locker room with chemistry are killer, and you guys are seeing it. And I hear what Horford's saying now, and I heard it last year when he's saying it, and it just kills the momentum of a game. You have defensive lack of, I guess, defensive work ethic, and I watched the Sixers losing to teams that they should easily kill, and I fear for you guys as I did last year watching an extremely talented team just not live up to expectations.
So what do you think the issue is when it comes to this kind of thing? Like, you're not insinuating that Horford's part of the problem. It's more that he's identifying problems that are already there?
Yeah, because he was actually a team player when Kyrie was out the year before. Horford was our team player, holding. He was like the glue holding it together. Mm-hmm. I still think, and again, as an outside person looking in, I think Simmons is part of the problem. Not willing to shoot, but the offense has to run through him. And although his defense is good at times, sometimes he just seems to be standing around in the paint doing nothing. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I think it eggs people on when he's like the superstar that's not showing up.
Well, I mean, and David, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate the perspective. The question becomes, like, is he a superstar to begin with? And I think that that's a worthwhile question because, I mean, let's face it. He's been a good to very good to sometimes great player for stretches. But I don't know if you can realistically call him a star on this team. Certainly not when you're talking about asking some other guys who have played large roles on their team, whether it's Josh Richardson or Al Horford, to take back seats. Joel Embiid's obviously the biggest reason for that, literally and figuratively. But the other side is that Ben Simmons conceivably is expected to contribute in a big way, and that hasn't really been the case night in and night out every single time. Now, there are some when he had 31 assists in two games, you kind of got the idea that, whoa, you know, maybe the corner's been turned and stuff like that, but you can't help but notice that Ben Simmons is the favored scapegoat for Sixers fans, non-Sixers fans, basketball fans, whoever's locked in and paying attention to what the Sixers have done or not done recently. Simmons is getting an awful lot of that attention. And I'm just saying that is a whole lot of people to dismiss as not knowing basketball. 610-632-0975, your phone number, top of board the conversation. Let's go to Big Homie in the Northeast next on 97.5, The Fanatic. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How you doing?
And I'm all right. I'd like to shout out you and your producer. So y'all doing a good job, and y'all playing a mediator right now. I'm in the car trying not to argue with my girlfriend. So I'm listening to your show. I'm listening to your show until you go off, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
I was going to talk about Brett, but since you brought Giannis up, I wanted to talk about him first.
Sure.
I don't know if you saw that interview right before the game on Christmas, but when they sat down and talked to him, one thing he said was he said he wasn't 100% confident in shooting, but he did it so he doesn't hurt the team. So he said he realized that sometimes he has to take a shot to help the offense.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
So he takes time and he practiced one-on-one every day with Kyle Korver. Another Philly legend to me, at least.
Uh-huh, of course.
But he practiced with Kyle Korver. So I'm like, if he notices that, how doesn't Ben notice that? Like, why doesn't Ben just even attempt and realize that would help the offense? Like, Al Horford has an issue right now, and it seems like he has the same issue that Jimmy Butler and other people said they had too. You know, and I don't know if it's Ben or Joel. But I argue with one of my buddies too, and I argue with the guy next door, manager at the store that I go to, because both of them say they'd rather keep Ben than keep Joel.
That's crazy.
Said that, you know, they don't think they can play together, and one has to go. I can't see keeping Ben over Joel.
No.
Over Joel, like maybe longevity wise, but like if you want to win now, I have to go with Joel over Ben.
Well, I mean, I think I would too.
Another issue is Brett. You know, but besides those two, I think it's Brett. I think Brett isn't utilizing them the right way, and I don't know if it's just me, but I see Ben being more like playing the four or something than playing a point guard. Like I'd rather him be more Dennis Rodman than Magic.
Well, what do you do with Horford then?
That's the problem, and that's why I think if one had to go, I would say Ben. Because like, I see Ben getting, you know, playing defense, getting rebounds, and just scoring right there under the basket. Because he's not going to shoot. So you have to give him some easy putbacks or layups or mm-hmm. something like that. So I think we should try to look for another point guard or do something. I mean, because even if you kept Ben and got rid of Joel, then I don't like Al at the center either. So I mean, you know, not for a full game. So I don't know. I was wanting to know, you know, what you thought about
well,
that.
Like, so
what would you do?
Well, here's and thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. Here's what I would say the issue is when it comes to. I did see the interview we were talking about with Giannis and shooting for the good of the team rather than the good of the player. I think the problem is that there is a disconnect, or let's just call it a difference of opinion, between what Giannis views as good for the team for the Bucks and what Ben views as good for the team for the Sixers, right? From Ben's perspective, he says that when it comes to shooting, you've got Tobias Harris and you've got Josh Richardson. If I can get a shot for those guys, why would I take a shot for myself from the perimeter when I am not as accomplished a shooter as they are? Right? So I don't think that he views it as like his own development in the long-term health of the Sixers, right? Like whether he could bolster his long-term value to the Sixers by developing a three-point shot. I think it's more that he's trying to win every single possession And if you're Ben Simmons, you consider yourself an unstoppable driver and everything else, right? I think that that is what people would say, you know, look, it's a win if you can get Ben Simmons to shoot on the outside, as opposed to having him penetrate and get to the basket and wreak havoc in the lane. In terms of what you would do, I mean, the key is that you've got to figure out a way to better maximize what you already have, because I don't anticipate that there are going to be trades when it comes to this team. Elton Brand built this team for this reason. And it's got to be on Brett Brown, by the way, not just to maximize Simmons and Embiid, but you got to find a way to get something from Horford, because that contract looks heinous at this point. 610-632-0975. More of your phone calls next. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.